Welcome to Michiana Adventist Forum. Today's program is Adventist Higher Education, a few things to keep in mind. And it's presented by Dr. Niels Erik Andreasen, president of the university, who is also a professor of Old Testament studies in the Seventh-day Adventist Theological Seminary. After the presentation, we'll have a chance for questions and discussion with Gary Gray coordinating that. I think I'm supposed to be speaking into this for the recording, even though it doesn't help you all. Okay. Well, as we begin our time together, Sharon Dugin is going to offer a word of prayer.
Let's bow our heads. Our kind Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunities that we have here at Andrews University to enter into discussions on topics that are mutually interesting and beneficial. And I ask that you will bless our discussion today. May we learn and may we honor and glorify you in Jesus' name, amen.
Well, this is our last scheduled program for the academic year. We look forward to seeing you back in the fall. And just some housekeeping things. There is a sign-up sheet if some of you are not getting email notifications and would like to. Add your name and email address back there. And we would like to acknowledge some of the people who have been helpful to keeping the programs going over this past year and longer. Terry Calkins, Debbie Robertson work on the publicity and the email for us. Jim Harris, who's the back of whose head you see every week down here, does our website and our audiovisual. Alyssa Williams manages our Facebook page. Someone you don't see up front is Bruce Zimmerman, who keeps our finances in order, and you can always brighten his day by making a tax-deductible contribution to the Adventist Forum. And two people that have made a real contribution over the last 12 years now are our secretary, Brian Strayer, who has been faithfully keeping the documentations of both our public meetings and our administrative meetings ever since our founding 12 years ago of this chapter. And Gary Gray, our chapter vice president, who has spent uncounted hours during these 12 years recruiting, working with speakers, and the arrangements to make the presentations possible. We really appreciate what you all have done for the forum, and we wish you the best as you relinquish your forum duties to tend to some other areas in your life. But we're always glad for your advice and help when you get your head above water. Also mention that the 2016 National Adventist Forum Conference is being held this year in Silver Spring, Maryland. It's the weekend of September 16 to 18. The theme is Nonviolence and the Atonement, and the speaker is Gregory Boyd, who's a pastor, a theologian, and a Christian pacifist. Some of you may have read some of his works. Thank you. And you can get more information on the Spectrum website. Well, it's a minor but interesting historical coincidence that when we revived the local forum chapter 12 years ago, our very first speaker in 2004 spoke on the future of SDA higher education, and it was presented by Dr. Andrea Luxton, who we now know is a future president of Andrews University. Today's presentation is titled Adventist Higher Education, A Few Things to Keep in Mind, and it's presented by the current president of Andrews University, Dr. Niels Erik Andreasen. So it'd be interesting to compare our secretary's summary of these two presentations and to see what's changed in 12 years. Dr. Andreasen became the fifth president of Andrews back in 1994, and that makes him now the longest serving president in the history of the institution. He was born in Denmark, earned his baccalaureate at Newbold College before coming to the United States. He holds 2 degrees from Andrews and a doctorate in religious studies from Vanderbilt University. He's been involved in teaching and leadership positions in Adventist higher education for, I guess it would be over 45 years now, since 1970 or so, before he came back to Andrews. As the president, he taught religion at Pacific Union College, served as the dean of the School of Religion at Loma Linda University, and was president of Walla Walla College. And I would add, in addition to his many other contributions to the Adventist community, he's been a longtime supporter of the Adventist Forum since its very earliest days. And our chapter here appreciates your moral support and your patience with us, and even your benign neglect when needed of our chapter's activities. So we're grateful for your sharing with us today, and the time is yours.
I thought the worst possible way of communicating anything to a group of senior Adventists on a sunny Sabbath afternoon right after dinner is to read a paper. This is not a paper. So I decided to make some brief points, paragraph in length, to see what you think of them. We can discuss these points, or we can skip to the next one. I told Gary it'll be like nailing 95 theses on the university door, and he said, don't do that. We don't want a revolution here. I said, a reformation, you mean? So, and besides, I didn't get to 95. I ran out at 14. So I told him, this is more like Wilson's 14 points. That's Woodrow after... Not Ted, Woodrow Wilson had 14 points at the end. Is that right? At the end of World
War
I?
That's right, yes.
Right, I know about that because when I sat my exams for matriculation in Denmark in social sciences, we drew questions in front of the censors, they call them, the examiners, and I drew Wilson's 14 points. How did Europe get redesigned after World War I? And I had the down pat. So now I have my 14 points today. Wilson, by the way, has fallen into disgrace a little bit because he was a bit of a segregationist, and there were some people who thought they should take his name off of all the buildings at Princeton. But they decided to keep the names on and just tell everybody what a nasty fellow he was when it came to integration. But his 14 points were really very good, I think. So I have my 14 points, and I'm not sure if I should just go through all 14, and then we can discuss anyone you care to discuss, or if you really want to stop me in the middle at any point, that's okay too. And each point will only take a minute to read or less. Point number one. From a 26-year perspective, 4 at Walla Walla and 22 at Andrews as a college president, I would keep an eye on the following. Learning outcomes in education will continue to matter, but not at the expense of economic efficiency in delivering it. General education probably cannot continue as a funding mechanism for very small majors. Why is that? Because more and more students buy general education on the cheap. Dual credit, advanced placement, community college, online. And the more people do that, the less undergraduate tuition money comes to the university. I would keep an eye on that. There will be ever more synergy developing between 4 years of high school and 4 years of college. They'll come together. Good or bad? Well, it's just something to take into account, I think, in the next few years. The residential campus will continue to attract students if it adds value to their life. Christian education will be supported if we make our students more mature, responsible, committed, and caring by graduation time. Individual character will trump collective ideology, I think. Read David Brooks' the road to character for an indication of how important that is going to be to everyone. These are just random trends that I see flying across our campus, and I would keep an eye on them. I already am keeping an eye on them, but going forward, I would keep both eyes on these, I think. I think these will be changes that we will see in the years ahead, all of them. That was the first point. And I can go to the second, then you can see if you want to talk about any of them. This is it's only one screen, so that'll make it easier. It's another observation, sort of unrelated, maybe a little bit related. Christian education is becoming costly for many Adventist family budgets, and we cannot ignore it. They say that 60% of Adventist families in North America have family income below $50,000 a year. 60%. So how are they going to afford Adventist education? So financial aid will have to be restructured, and we are actually in process, in the midst of it right now. That will continue. Front-loaded aid again. That means you pay more in the first year and less in the senior year. Programs of study could be shortened. Work and study may be combined for some students. And cost reductions per student should be achieved by increased volume and improved student-teacher ratio. I think that's knocking on our doors. And if you look carefully at our budgets this year and next, you will find that at Andrews, the discount rate has increased from 37% to 40% in just 2 years. What's a discount rate? That's the amount of money Andrews gives back to students for every dollar they pay. It's now 40 cents on the dollar that Andrews gives back to students. That leaves 60 cents to live on. When that becomes 55, we become Sweetbriar. A nice endowment, but not enough to pay bills. So it's a critical point at 40. If it gets much beyond that, we won't have enough left over. Unless we have a huge endowment to fund the 40%, but we don't. Our endowment is about 50 million, and that does not cover the 40% by a long mile. We get money from the church, that also helps. So that's a big ticket item, and we are right in the churning of it as we speak. And our chief financial officer is quite concerned that we came to 40. We are also doing front loading. You can get into the nursing program next year at Andrews, and you're getting a 75% discount. They hardly pay anything in nursing. It's almost free. That's front loading to try to address this question. This problem will not go away. The $1.2 trillion student debt will probably not all be repaid. The current default rate for students is about 10%. A new paradigm is proposed by two of our political candidates, but not from the GOP party. So we will see if that will ease it some in the area of student borrowing and funding higher education. That is touching us, and it will touch us more going forward. I would keep an eagle eye on that. Yes?
What is the General Conference's priority for education in their funding budget plan?
The General Conference doesn't get into this question. The church offices provide support for education in different ways. We get some from the union and from the division, but only for the seminary, and some from the General Conference, but only for graduate education. And that is tied to a formula tied to church budgets and, in some cases, tithe. It doesn't have anything to do with what students have to pay and what they can't afford to pay. So it's like a living endowment, very valuable. But it is what it is, and it doesn't go up much. Thank you.
How and why is Christian education more important for the members of presumably the Adventist Church than other education?
I would like to come back to your questions because of some of the other points, if that's okay. Sure. The question was, why is Christian education so important to Adventists? Right now, this point is about money. Yes?
Since we're giving back 40%, would it be possible to lower the price of tuition so that the students coming in are not so shocked?
Right.
They can't afford to go there.
The question is, could we fix this problem by lowering the tuition charges? That has been tried in a number of places, generally lasted for 1 or 2 years, then it went right back up again and higher than before. I don't know what it is, but ask yourself what you do when you buy a car. You will rather buy a Cadillac at a great discount than a cheap Chevrolet. Students are somewhat the same. So somehow it hasn't worked so far, but it's really an interesting idea.
One of the proposals out there on the political scene is to essentially make public college education free or close to it. If that should happen, what would the implications be?
Yes. There are a couple of things that are changing. Question, what's happening to public education? Is it becoming free? And there was the question. There are a couple of things happening. One, in parts of the country, community colleges are free. Tennessee is one case. And it hit Southern. Southern has had 3 or so years of drop in their freshman class. And they think part of it has to do with free community college tuition in Tennessee. President Obama has proposed that community colleges should be free in the whole country. That has not yet been voted by anybody. So that's one thing. The other thing that's happening is that the federal government is now publishing basic data on all colleges and universities. You can look it up on the internet. It tells you what the charges are, what student debt is, how many students get jobs, and what students who graduate are paid in their first job. So our finances and student finances is very, very public right now for those who care to look. It's called the scorecard. If you look on your browser, scorecard, right? Then you get the government publication on all the statistical financial data on all colleges in the country. You go down to Andrews, it'll tell you what we charge, what the discount rate is, how much students debt have when they graduate, how many students get a job, how much they get paid on the first job, etc., etc. It's all for everyone to see. That means we are living in a very open, transparent environment. And that makes this something that will not go away. It'll be there. That was another point. Let me give you another one, number three. Okay, here we go. This is unrelated to the previous, but Adventist students and families know they have choices in selecting a college, and they exercise their choices. That's somewhat pertinent to the question before. Some years ago, many Adventist families didn't think they had a choice. I mean, if you're a good Adventist, you go to an Adventist college. But that's changing in the minds of some people, especially recent Adventists. There was a focus group of new Adventists in the greater Los Angeles area some years ago. And young Adventists of Hispanic families were asked, do you know about Loma Linda? They said, yes, that's a big hospital out in San Bernardino. Do you know it's an Adventist university? No. Why not? Well, because their school was the public institution up the street, and their church was the Adventist church, which they attended from Sabbath morning, 9 o'clock, until Sabbath afternoon at 6. That is church, and school is school. That's becoming more common. We cannot prevent that by putting a guilt trip on people. Selecting an Adventist college must be a clear value proposition, something that is obviously and indisputably good. Here's the new formula for our kind of education. If it's not good, do not dare call it Christian, and do not expect us to attend. Failure at that point can quickly turn to disaster, and the case in point is AUC. It wasn't good anymore, and students went somewhere else. And we lost it, probably unnecessarily. So I would keep an eye on that too. It's not a threat, it's just part of life in which we live today. And if we are aware of it, we can meet it and respond to it in a better way, I think. This has always been true in Denmark, where I grew up. Most young Adventists attend the University of Copenhagen or Aarhus. Some went to Newbold. It was just a choice that people made. And this is coming, I think, more and more to this country. Number four. It's another idea. You may not like any of them. Or number... I guess there was some more to number three. So we know, still under number three and the choices. So we know that small, rural, religious, independent colleges do close or restructure to survive. So far, it has happened to only one Adventist college, that's AUC. But take a look at the prediction by the Moody company. Moody is a bond rating company, right? So companies that issue bonds get rated by Moody, and other companies too. But Moody has rated Adventist colleges, and this American colleges, who issue bonds. So Moody knows a lot about the finances of all the colleges that issue bonds, because they have to rate them. And Moody will give reports on the financial strength or weaknesses of many, many colleges, but only those that issue bonds. So we are not rated by Moody, so they don't know how well or how badly off we are. But the Moody report is a little frightening, because they'll tell you how many colleges issue bonds to pay for their buildings and so on, and what is their financial situation. It's a good source of financial information, or the strength, financial strength of our colleges, by reading Moody's reports. Well, that was number three. Now comes number four. Another trend I see. More Adventist institutions will change to become very much Christian, but less denominational. For example, Loma Linda University, more than half the students are not from our church. La Sierra, about half. Washington Adventist, more than half. Adventist University in Florida, 90% or 95%, Kettering, the same. For the rest of us, less so in this country, but abroad, more so. Samyuk University in Korea is almost a public university for surplus students in Seoul who are looking for a good university to attend, and they come to ours. That will not necessarily soften the Christian character of education if we are attentive to our Christian witness. It may even make our institutions more decidedly Christian, because we have to seek that deliberately. Perhaps easy Christianity, like cheap grace, compare Bonhoeffer, is dangerous to our spiritual health also on a campus. I don't know how that will take hold, but I can tell you that I pushed for the School of Distance Education to come to Andrews. I suggested it to the General Conference president at the time, who was asking me what I thought, and I said, how putting it on a campus? And I did it because Andrews is in the fields. We can't do what La Sierra and Loma Linda can do. We don't have a big population around here we can tap into, so we have to take Andrews out to where the people are through distance education. That was my, recipe for growing Andrews. That was number four. Here, number five is another idea. Oops. This is a little different, but I thought a bit about it, so I share it for what it is worth. We need to work harder on combining high academic quality and deep religious piety in Adventist education. It cannot be taken for granted, even with a full Adventist employment roster and an Adventist board. We must continually seek for the heart and soul of Christian education. Compare Arthur Holmes, Building the Christian Academy. It's a little book. It's worth a read. Holmes taught at Wheaton for years and years, and he struggled with this question and did a history, actually all the way back to the time of the Academy of Athens, the first European university, right? Plato and Aristotle, which was sort of accepted by the Christians and then baptized with a Christian heart and soul. And he explains how that happened in history. It's worth a read because we have to think of that, I think, especially for those institutions that are bringing in 50%, 60%, 90% of the students from outside the church. And it's a struggle in Korea. It used to be easier in Korea, they told me, because at one time all these public students coming into Samyuk went to evangelistic meetings on Sabbath morning and they were all baptized. Not anymore. Korea, the Korean church is losing members. It's becoming more secular, more affluent, and they're worried about the graduates, even those who joined the church, that they will disappear again after graduation. So last I heard, they were trying to build a big church right next to campus that could capture them on the way out. So you have to think how to combine the essentially a standard university with Christian principles. And that was Arthur Holmes' point in his little book, his primer on this topic. There's another one. Number six. We've touched that a little bit. Due to its geographical isolation, Andrews must grow its distance education, I think. And that's why we bought the union office. Don't feel too badly. The General Conference gave us all the money to pay for it. And they gave us money to start the program. We were like bandits in a way. We got so much money from a very generous church. And just this week, this week, the General Conference gave us another $1 million to develop distance education programs online to serve the World Church. There's a lot of support for that, and we are positioned to receive that and do something with it down in the old Lake Union building. So Andrews must grow its distance education online rapidly, both far from campus and also quite near to campus, and make them more cost-effective, initially by increasing volume. Our volume is still too low. I figure we need 4 times as many distance education students to generate the revenue we get from on-campus students. And we are not there. We are a long way from that. Something like that, because distance education students pay a lot less, so we need many more of them to bring in the revenue. I think of it as an Andrews education beyond our campus borders, or taking our education to the students and not just the other way around, take the students to education. That I would keep an eye on in the future. I think that's critical for us. We can talk now or after, any way you want. Here's something entirely different. I'm spending a lot of time on that. The Health and Wellness Initiative is not a fad, but intended to morph Andrews Adventist education into something akin to its original form, while directing our education objectives close to the heart of national and global concerns for population health, safety, and well-being. Present truth education, once again. Because health and wellness and safety is present truth in our world today. It now appears that I have almost corralled my colleagues into an agreement on the size and function of the facility and the activities within it, with a construction cost of around 17 million, 15 of which have been identified. The final plans will be reviewed by me this week, and then by the President's Council in May, and the June board, and then taken public at homecoming. That's our plan. I think it will give a lift and a boost to the campus and help us figure out our broader mission commitment of Adventist education to make the world a better place and to make people better people.
I don't quite understand that, Neil Berry, that we've got a building coming.
We have a program going and a building coming. Okay. Where have you been for the last 3 years?
I've been retired for 15 years.
Okay. Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
I just wondered if you couldn't integrate that health and wellness initiative through the internet rather than on.
Well, we should probably talk about that. Joe's question is, can that be provided through distance education? Well, it already is. We have a degree in public health education entirely online. They've just started a doctor of nurse practitioner entirely online. They're just starting an undergraduate nurse completing degree entirely online, including for nurses who work at Lakeland, who don't have a degree but would like to have it. So there's lots of online stuff. But then I thought, what are we giving our students who come here? Johnson Gym, built in 1950 or 60. So what do we do for them? Another gym? No, a health and wellness center out here in front. I've talked to Lakeland, they're interested. I've talked to Whirlpool, they're interested, not only for their North American employees, but they have factories all over the world, and the factory workers are not all in good shape. They're actually quite interested in changing the corporate culture to make it more health and wellness conscious for our students, faculty, staff, community, and even collaboration with corporations like Whirlpool.
So this is an Adventist YMCA kind of
thing. It's Adventist for sure, and it's health and wellness, and it's like Sister White said, stay well in your body and in your psychological health, and your spiritual well-being will follow. Right, we can talk a great deal about that, but it is on the way, and Dominique Wakefield is the director. And by the way, Dominique got 2 recognitions for her work already. Last week she got a gold medal for Andrews University from some national organization of health conscious institutions of higher learning. There were 6 gold medals, and we got one of them, and some got silver. I forgot the organization, American Educational Institution for Health. And then last week, she got a designation as a leading health educator in community health issues from the President of the United States. I didn't know that. They must have some kind of an agency that promotes this and they reward people. Somebody turned her name in, and she is going to Washington to get something around her neck because of that. Dominique Wakefield, if you don't feel up to it, go see her. By the way, as a pilot to see if that would work, she issued an offer to any student to apply for a $3,000 scholarship to get a health makeover. Had you heard about that? Well, I met the student. She was a little choppy and really not feeling too terribly well, and had a hard time running up the steps and wasn't focusing on her studies too much and just blah, blue. And so she got into that, and she has a personal trainer. She's lost a bunch of weight. She's combed her hair much better. She feels like a $1 million. She's running up and down the stairs, and they're videotaping every change that occurs week by week. There'll be a record have a student maker, or next year Dominique would like to offer that to a lot of people who like to get well and look like Hollywood or something and get better grades at the same time. They figured out that in Ohio and Indiana, they figured out that students in university who spend 15 hours a week in fitness bring their grades up from a B minus to a B plus, that kind of range. Even if they don't study anymore, just by staying away and staying well. It's unbelievable. So there's a lot of interest in that, and we are not far behind. That was number 7. Number 8. Andrews University operations are suffering from a structural deficit. Back to money again. That must change if we do not want to run out of money from time to time. I have failed to do that, as have my predecessors, but the urgency remains. Andrews and most other universities like ours suffer from it and are economically fragile. Addressing it will require us to reduce the number of moving parts that currently make our educational machine so costly to operate. Take a hint from the car industry. When Ford could not sell their cars anymore because they were too expensive and too inefficient and too many recalls, they decided to reduce the number of parts that fitted into the front end of a Ford from 27 to 18 or something like that. And right away, the quality went up, the cost went down, and they avoided some of these recalls. It's re-engineering of cars. It happens, you know, 2008-09 when they were about to go bankrupt, all these motor cars, and Ford had just borrowed a whole bunch of money, so they got it through all right, redesigning their cars. General Motors and Chrysler had to borrow from the federal government to do this, and now their cars are running again. Something like that probably will be needed for education, I think, because as it is, our income stream is not keeping up with our expense stream.
Could you explain what that means concretely?
A structural deficit. We have devised a machine, an organization, where income and expense are not in a good balance.
Can you give an example of a moving part in education?
I will step on toes if I do. He asked for an example. I think we offer across the campus more classes than we need to graduate students. I don't know how much, 3%, 5%. I think some of our non-curriculum processes of serving students, getting them into college, advised, registered, all that machinery, I think needs to be simplified. It's not my words. I hired a consultant once, and he said, you suffer from a structural deficit. We have programs off campus. He said they are Cadillac programs. You send the most expensive teachers to teach off campus. No one else can afford it. Now, it's a good thing, but how can we bring balance between our revenue and expense stream? And you know right now, we have had 2 bad years of operations at Andrews. Pretty bad. And we've had to realign our operation budgets, and it's been terrible. And as you probably know, there are some people who won't be with us next year because of that. And there are some services we cannot provide because of that. So this is like a re-engineering of many of the functions we have. But remember the first point, we are not going to turn away from outcome assessment and quality. We just have to figure out a way to make a Ford that runs with fewer parts but goes just as fast and even more safely. Yes, I don't know. I think you were first and then here.
Well, using your metaphor of cars, in the 70s, you could open a hood and identify most of the parts in there. I remember I used to climb into my dad's car and work on it. Nowadays, there's a lot more stuff in there. So I think the same is for education. think of how many IT personnel we employ now compared to 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Student success, campus ministries office, there's so much more complications, and some of those are because we now need federal mandates to provide those services.
Exactly.
So partly is the cars got more complex, partly we have redundancy at Andrews.
And of course there are public regulations. How many times have I received letters in my stay here from the feds and from the state saying, you need to report on this annually. It shouldn't take you more than one FTE. All right, thank you. That's $50,000 or $60,000. How many times does that happen? You multiply that up, you're spending $1 million just on that alone. So in this time of complications, can we figure out a way to simplify things? That's the question, because it's just getting hard, really hard. And so what suffers? Deferred maintenance, salaries, scholarships for students, research. This is where we suffer, because we have to squeeze these things all the time. And so if I was younger, I would probably institute a group A on this campus, call it re-engineering. I remember when I came here for the first time, the faculty complained that to register a student, that student had to clear, I think it was 15 hurdles. They called them buckets. Student application and registration got stuck in a bucket, and there it sat until somebody put it in another bucket. And it took forever. And the education directors of this union met with me for lunch, and they said, it's very good at Andrews, but it takes forever to get in. And I remember saying to the registrar, Penner was his name, Penner, I only want 3 buckets next year. Okay? He came to my office and he said, I've got it down to 3, but they were big buckets. I said, make them smaller. And I think we actually have streamlined the process of getting students into campus. They can register online, they can pay online. The computer's actually helping compared to how it was. Now we need to push these concepts throughout the campus before we go bankrupt on providing all these services. Okay, well, I have a few more. You may find something more interesting here. That's number 9. I believe Andrews has more faculty strength than we realize, but it has to be nurtured through support, renewal, and careful selection of incoming teachers. Identifying church members with doctorates is only the beginning step towards selecting exemplary Christian educators. Teaching is a high calling and requires exemplary personnel and professional preparation and commitment. The doctorate going forward is only the tip of the iceberg. It's what's underneath that counts. That was not so when I came here. We were written up by the Higher Learning Commission in Chicago because we just scraped by with a percentage of doctorates on the faculty, 67%. That was the bottom for a university like ours, and we just had the numbers, and they gave us 5 years accreditation, which was not good. So we were so busy getting doctorates, and that's much better now, so we got 10 years. Now we have to work on the quality of the education and the people we bring here, and I would think that would be a delightful challenge to deal with for change in the years ahead, to nurture and grow faculty who already have their doctorates. That's not a kind of thing to seek after. We just assume that more or less now. So I think there's great potential in the faculty, but we need to pay attention to it. Number 10. The biggest challenge, this one will get me into the doghouse, I think. Anyway, here we go. The biggest challenge to our diversity is that so often we each ask what Andrews can do for each one of us, and not what we can do together for Andrews, as Kennedy asked us once. There really are no unallocated resources waiting to be claimed by any one individual or group amongst us. We all need to put in more than we take out. That way we build the university together, and only then can our diversity become our strength. I think. And that's not how we all see it. We should, I think. So let me hurry on to something less controversial. Number 11. I believe it is possible for an Adventist educator to be loyal to our church while nurturing a life of the mind, which is one of my pep themes here. This is one choice we do not have to make. Intellectual curiosity and genuine piety are symbiotic. But that has to be demonstrated one person at a time. It's a personal matter, not a policy matter, nor an ideology. Therefore, the evidence of it is anecdotal and confessional. And I refer to my opening chapter in the big volume, SDA Education in North America, on that score, in which I try to argue that point. And it gives me comfort to know that we don't have to fight this battle. That's unnecessary. It's old-fashioned. Somebody asked me about it just last week in a general conference, and I said, my impression is that those of us who fight this battle of piety and intellectual curiosity tend to be those of us who are older. When I meet incoming younger faculty persons, they're saying, no, we like to come here and feel free to talk about our faith with our students in the hallways. It's a delight. They don't fuss with it as much as we old-timers do. 12. If I were to identify one and only one priority for Adventist education, it would be to teach our students very, very well. I say that on the basis of what I have learned from speaking with hundreds, perhaps thousands of alumni during my stay here. And it was also the first advice I received when beginning my teaching career at Pacific Union College, and it had three parts that people really impressed upon me, senior colleagues. I tried to follow them as much as I could. Number one, complete your doctorates before you begin to teach. I know it's hard work, but you have to complete it. Sometimes you might as well get on with it. Number two, stay away from committees as much as possible. They are deadly. Oops. Uh-oh. Number six again. Oops. All three of them. This is what I was told when I began. My first year, a dean from another Adventist college came by, and I was throwing frisbees with a student. And he shouted for me down up the hill at PUC, and he said, I have some advice for you. Thank you. Complete the doctorate. Stop throwing frisbee, I guess he was saying. Complete the doctorate before you begin to teach. Well, I did that. Number two, stay away from committees as much as possible. They had accreditation, and they asked me to stay in a committee. I said, please, do I have to do that? I'm trying to be a teacher. They let me off the hook. And number three, become a friend with students. These three I would ask for again and again and again, because they built the faculty the way nothing else built the faculty up, I think. What's that?
Can you explain more number two?
Stay away from committees as much as possible. Mm-hmm. We have too many. Every time we have an accreditation visit here, they tell us you've got too many committees. And each time we try to reduce them, and each time we don't. Really. So we go from committee to committee. But I know, of course, it's hard because we all want to be stakeholders. I'm not critical of anybody. I'm just saying it takes so much time. So we have a faculty senate. Let's have an academic committee and a student life committee, and that's it. What would happen? Would the world come to an end? Probably not. That's what I was told to keep in mind, and I turned down committee assignments at least the first 5 years until I got some experience with teaching. Then I said, okay, I don't have to prepare new lectures every single day. So I relented a little bit. But we have been told that many, many times by external consultants. And there's another thing I've thought about. In addition to being on these committees forever and ever, please understand I'm not critical. I'm doing it myself. So I'm talking to myself, right? In addition to being on all these committees, we work 4.5 days. Because we Adventists, we quit Friday at noon. I know, because I work until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and there's not a living soul on the campus at that time, except the maintenance people or the sweepers.
All day Sunday, sir.
So everyone goes home. So that means 1/2 day a week, right? And in a month, that is 4 half-days. That's 2 whole days. And we have 12 months or 10 months, let's say. That's 20-some-odd days. We don't work when other people work. So that's a whole month less than a year that we don't work compared to other institutions. So what do? We work long hours and get really tired. And we overwork ourselves. So we have to figure out a way to deal with that. And committees. Sorry to say this, but I'm on the way out. You can't do much damage to me now. But I always ask, fewer committees, simplify it, and if we have to, work Friday afternoon until an hour before sunset to just get things done. I learned to do that when I was writing some books I did once on the Sabbath, and I was trying to figure out how to understand the creation story that God finished his work on the 6th day, right? And then he could rest. And I asked, do I finish my work on the 6th day? Hardly ever, because that's Friday and I stop halfway through. So I decided to make amends. And I organized my work so that on Friday, by about mid-afternoon, my desk was sort of clear. And I could say, I'm doing just like God is doing now at creation. And I can go home. And you know, the Sabbath is much nicer if your desk is clear before you go home. Just a bit of advice. You don't have to follow it. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, 1 year, a few years ago, we counted up and Bob was on 21 committees.
So this is not an Andrew's disease. It's an Adventist problem. I attended a lecture once in a general conference, and an educator came to meet and speak to these people, and they were all presidents of things, like conference and union and division, those kind of people. And I was there by fluke, I think. And this speaker stood up and asked, I'm going to talk to you about boardsmanship. First, how many boards are you on? Honestly, count up, and then I will ask. And they counted up, and he began to ask, how many on 1, 2, 3, 15, 20, 30? And he found that most of these presidents were on 15 to 25 or 30 boards. And his comment was, you're not board members if you're on more than 4. Can't be done. You're just a committee member who fly in and out. And so that's where we learned this bad habit of going to 27 committees, and we sit and we listen and we cast our vote and we go, and life continues as it was. Sorry about that.
I'm gonna get off some committees. I was just tell them that the president said
yes.
We need to cut down. You know, could it be that
you restructure the committee? I know it's hard because I was asked to do it and I reduced by 1. It's terrible.
Of you leaving town, I'm going to take advantage.
But
I noticed one thing that many of our doctoral students in other corporations, the move is now towards project teams. And it's much more, I've noticed that it's much different than committees. They're working groups, they have a limited time, they get something done, they get off them, and they move on. So I wonder if we started replacing committees with project teams, we would start fading out the committees and have project groups that get buzzed by accomplishing something and then off, regroup.
His question was, instead of having committees, could we work on projects and get team projects? Yes. To me, it is a matter of re-engineering, and it's terribly difficult, but every time I look at it, I say to myself, we ought to find a way to do it because it will make life better for Andrews and for each one of us. Let me go to 13 and 14, then we'll see. 13 is personal. Okay. In case you missed it, or do not believe me, I'm not leaving my position because I'm exhausted or frustrated or in need of rest. I decided to stop at the end of my current term with some sadness, but out of a profound sense of what is best for the university after nearly a quarter century in my post, and also for me to turn to some other more personal responsibilities. Of course, I could have stayed another year or two, perhaps without too much harm to anyone. But that is precisely the wrong approach to concluding one's career. One should enter each new year or term of service as though it were a new beginning and not a near end. The latter would be less than ideal for both the institution and oneself. In fact, it would be detrimental to Andrews. I'm getting older, but not so old as to miss that self-evident truth. Now you know. That's why I made the decision. Not because I've run out of gas. And number 14. I always thought our current provost would be a good choice to succeed me. And I told her so ever since she first arrived on campus, many times. But for obvious reasons, I did not attempt to interfere with the selection process, at least not in any obvious way. She is smart enough to have earned this position without my assistance or intervention, but she is not gifted enough to succeed it without your support. So please be at least as supportive of her as you have been of me. And that was the 14th point. That's all I have to say. So we can talk about anyone you like for a bit. You want to control this?
Yeah, let's start with John and then over here, Dr. Habeneck, and then Bob.
This side.
And then we'll get over to this side.
Regarding your point about long-distance education, and I share the view that Andrews has to go to it, but I'm concerned that what's happening in the School of Distance Education is it's risking cannibalizing the rest of the university. It seems to me at times there is clear evidence of competition such that costs on the long distance education school side are so much lower to the students that you're going to entice students to go that way, and I see it happening during May Express or summer and so on. So I think I don't know how you're going to deal with it or your successor, but I think it's a real problem.
Right. I'm aware of it. I have heard it expressed before. And it's true, as you pointed out, about any other kind of a discount offerings we make of our regular classes. May Express, half the price, twice the speed. And we have now a number of classes we offer to high school students, and they pay practically zip for that privilege. And so I looked at the numbers. Our enrollment this semester, or this year, I should say, is not that far off from where it should be, but there's a huge chunk of high school students registered, and there's no revenue to speak of, to speak for it. So is distance education contributing to that? Is our distance education doing it, or is the environment in which we find ourselves contributing to that? As they say at Southern, with free community colleges, more and more kids think that's the place to get your first year under your belt. So probably you're right that the School of Distance Education needs to find its stride. However, that's to say, it ought to work at a distance and deal with other students and not the students who should be dealt with on campus. However, we don't have these students chained to campus anymore. That's another problem. So if we don't offer them something, Who will? Liberty University? They have 30,000 students on distance. You know, people are aware of that. So it's a kind of a complicated issue. And I think if we are not in it, we are definitely being left behind. If we are in it, we may have some growing pains. And in my judgment, that school has a lot of growing to do before it is really profitable for us. So thank you. It's a balance. You are right. And I'm trying to figure out actually how much revenue we get from distance education. And the chief financial officer tells me it's very difficult because a lot of it gets steered directly to our on-campus departments as indirect revenue from distance education teaching, but a lower level. The question is, if he said, no, you can't take these English classes and history classes, where would the students go for them? Into our expensive on-campus classes or to Lake Michigan College? If they still get a president back in office one of these days, we'll see. They're struggling a bit getting organized, I understand. Yes?
I'd like to talk to your very, very first notes that you put up there, number one. You said that you thought that people should get their money's worth when they come to college. I'm thinking about the kids that come here and leave and aren't married yet. And one of the reasons that parents send their kids to school is to find an Adventist spouse. Mm. When we finished a week after graduation, we were married and on our way to Loma Linda. The folks that we stood up with us were married the very day of graduation, had to get back from their honeymoon to be at our service. Even 45 years ago when we came, we would get a dozen invitations to come to services right after marriage services ceremonies. But now, if I get one a year, that would be very, very unusual. And the kids, we see lovely girls leave here. They've been here 4 years, not had a date. It's because of the way we live, but we're not doing things right to make them have a place to go, and how to do it, teaching how to do it. What can we do to make that happen different?
Right. Thank you. I don't know how to fix that. It has occurred, you heard the question perhaps about kids are not getting married when they graduate. I guess many kids are waiting a little longer to get married than they used to maybe. I think that's part of it. I don't know about the Adventist Church, but did you know, speaking about marriage, that 40% of American babies are born to people who are not married? 40. And about half of them are born to parents who don't even live together, and the other half are born to parents who live together but not married. So marriage is not quite the wonderful thing it was when we graduated from college. So maybe we ought to have a marriage class, how to get married when they're in college, because it is a good place to find a mate. I did. We met in college. And we didn't marry right away, though. Didn't have the money or the ability. But eventually, we got around to it. Thank you. Interesting comments.
This goes back to your first point. And I guess another way of saying it would be, how can life on a campus like ours provide value that's beyond Kaplan University or Phoenix University or something like that? What would we or should we be doing differently than what we're doing now in order to make a campus experience more valuable than distance education?
The question is, we have a residential campus. To keep it, we have to add value from the residential campus to students. And what can we do or what are we not doing to add that? I think we are doing many good things. I don't know exactly how to quantify that, but just an anecdote, it struck me. On Thursday, I went to speak in chapel for students. It was their last chapel, and somebody invited me. I'm doing all these last things. It's a bit depressing. So I went to speak to the students, and I just told them about college, and I told them that you are very lucky. only 30% of Americans finish college, and only 7% of the world population finish college, and you are in college, and I was, and we are really fortunate people. To give them a lift and say, this is a good thing you are in, enjoy it. And I told them about celebrating being a student, which I did in Denmark, and I showed them a video of how we did that and so on. What I want to say is that afterwards, students came in streams to the front to do a selfie, to talk, to say hello, to shake my hand. And I didn't do anything particular for them. I mean, I'm not a preacher type person. I just stood behind my desk and read through my pages of some kind of a hairy speech on the benefits of an education. And they came and talked, and I thought, these are really nice kids. They are here, and they enjoy it, and they want to come to talk to their president, who is retiring, an old gray-haired fellow, and to have selfies done, and give me hugs, and someone to pray for me. And so I think we are doing a lot of good things, and we will never win them all, but whenever I meet with students, I'm pretty impressed. So I think what gives more value to students in a residential campus than anything else is the third bit of advice I got when I began teaching: be a friend with students. Every teacher and staff will just walk down the hallway and say, Joe, how's it going? Well, not so well. Well, what's the problem? Come to my room and let's talk about it. These are probably the best memories I have from my teaching days. And students would come in and they were failing their classes. What to do? I said, I don't know, come back and bring your notes. And let me see what you're doing with your work. It was terrible. So I said, let me tell you how to do it. And right away we became friends. So making friends with students, I think, is the most important thing. And after that is the programs and services that are provided by student life and the academic support areas. I hear generally good things about that as well. The personal touch, that is not present in a commuter campus. We have an edge on that, and we must never give it up or consider it a waste of time to spend 5 minutes talking to one student after class. You know how it is, you meet these kids 30, 40, 50 years later, whenever many years it is, and they still remember that conversation. I was moved. I had forgotten when Richard Shea, your successor, gave a speech last Saturday night. And he came to me when he was my student, I guess, years ago, and asked if he could borrow my books. I said, Richard, no, I don't lend them out because they never come back. But I tell you what, I'll give you a key to my office. You can come and study any book you want in the evening. That changed his life. And he decided to become a teacher so he could do the same with his students. It was a small thing. I just gave him a key. I said, Richard, you can go to my office, but keep the books on the shelves. Anybody can do something like that to a good student, and you want them for life. Sir.
Piggybacking what Harold said about marriage, the average time for people getting married in the U.S. right now is 29 for males and 27 for females. And that's part of an issue that I met my wife in college too. And one of the reasons I attended an Adventist college, because I grew up on a ranch in western Nebraska. I was the only high school age kid in my church. I went to TA really so I could be with other Adventist young people. But I thought about the fitness center. I see the fitness center as playing a role and getting a place where faculty and students can interact in a social. I think the more social and recreational activities we can provide for students and faculty and engage with them, I think that's a positive thing.
Thank you. That's for Dr. Habenicht. He was just saying the average age for students to get married today is 29 for males and 28 for females. And that's probably why you don't get so many invitations at graduation time. And the other comment was that the fitness center is intended to get people together. In fact, just Friday, somebody told me that we have these workout stations in the two dorms, and they do pretty well. But someone said, nowadays, kids like to do the machines and the squash and racquetball together, men and women, boy, male and female. So this center will bring them together, and there will be a Gatorade bar and a power, you know, they can get something to. So it will be a place to hang out, exactly, and do things that will keep them well.
Yeah, you mentioned about the endowment, that the endowment is 50 million, which I think it has been there for a long time. What is the plan to improve it?
His question was about the endowment of Andrews University. It has never been much. When I came here, it was about 3 million. It has grown to about 50, which is very small for an institution like Andrews. However, in distinction from almost all other institutions in the country, we receive probably 9, 10 million a year from different church entities, right? So we would need an endowment of close to 200 million to get that much out of endowment earnings each year. You can call that a living endowment. It comes when the market is up and when the market is down. It may not be quite 10, it may be 8 or something like that. So we may have the equivalent of 250 million in terms of what we get from sources other than tuition and the university's businesses. That, you asked the question, sorry, I'm looking at you, that contribute to our operations. And even with that, we are struggling to make our income and expense work. But that's, so 50 is what we have in our own endowment funds, and then what comes from the church is requiring, if it were earnings from an endowment, about 200 million, something like that. And so that would be the equivalent of 250, which is not high for an institution like ours these days, but it's somewhat respectable.
I wanted to follow up on point number 11 that you made. Point number 11 that you made about the fact that being a university in a university community and having a curious mind and an intellectual bent does not prevent you from being a religious person, being a good Seventh-day Adventist. It feels, though, that the church at large does not agree with that. That there's a suspicion of people who are educated, pointy-headed intellectuals who are trying to find ways, perhaps, to get around what's plain reading of the scripture, you know, kind of code words for that sort of thing. So can you help us with that? Because that's a real struggle with our own personal faith, to be a part of a church that doesn't value education, when yet it says it really does.
So that question had to do with my comment that religious faith or piety and intellectual interests are compatible, not incompatible here. And your question was that you don't see so much evidence of that. I think I'm right in remembering that I went on to say that that's more true at the personal level, perhaps, that than an ideological kind of place. But I still think it is remarkably true for our church, though I know these issues, these corporate issues that come up once in a while, and I've been in the thick of them many times when the brethren will call me up and say, what's happening at Andrews with Professor such and such and such and such, and I have to get into that. And I would say in all of these cases, I think, I'm trying to remember how many there have been from different departments, after I sat down with the teacher and listened and sat down with the brethren and explained, it got itself worked out. In fact, the last big hop-up was in one of the sciences. And I talked to the brethren, and finally they said, well, yeah, we understand that people are wired differently. And so their commitment to intellectual inquiry and to faith comes across a little different. It's personal in some ways, and we cannot just have a kind of a grit into which everyone will fit. And I said, that's exactly right. There's some very committed, pious people here who ask questions that you think are funny, but they're not funny for that person. So you have to explain this a little bit, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm impressed by the fact that this church of ours, which came out of American revivalism, believing that Jesus was coming in 1844 and heaven would come down, I mean, we were really into something quite remarkable, that within 20 years, we organized into a church, and 10 years later, they established Battle Creek College. They said education. And I read the minutes of the first board at Battle Creek College. And the president of the General Conference was Irving or something? W.I. Irving, I think, yeah. There was a chap like that. There were young people in their 40s. And he said, this college is going to be second to none in the state of Michigan. They opened it because the legislature in Lansing had agreed that private colleges could be chartered in the state of Michigan. So the Adventists said, here's one for us. We need a college. They got it chartered a few years later. And that's what he said. And you look at the curriculum. Latin, Greek, logic, rhetoric, Caesar and Cicero, you know, the whole thing they had to read, and some science and geography. That was the curriculum, a remarkable commitment to the life of the mind by a bunch of educators, none of whom had even been to college. They were looking high and low to find a principal who had a college degree at that college. So yes, there have been ups and downs, but in the aggregate, we have 115 colleges in the world, 7,500 schools and colleges, about 1.8 million students enrolled in Adventist education, research going on, and medical stuff. It doesn't sound like Jehovah's Witnesses or some Pentecostal group that are, you know, holding up their hands and hoping that it will get okay. We want to know. And so I think if you look aside from this ripples of fluff, there's a lot of deep-seated commitment to education. And so why would the General Conference last week say, Andrews, $1 million, go send your education to China, where there are 450,000 members, with no school? That's essentially what they said to us. I thought that was quite remarkable. And they had a fight in the committees. Some said that's too much money for Andrews, and some said no. They're doing good work for us around the world. Let's feed them. Dr. Staples.
I'm very curious. The seminary, the relationship of the seminary to the wider university. Very important lecturers come to the seminary and no one attends. They have very important lectures in the college, geophysics, science, all kinds of things that would be very helpful. None of the seminary go there. Wouldn't there be much benefit for the church and everything for closer unity? I can't help comparing this with Princeton. Three institutions at Princeton. There's a music college, there's the university, and the seminary. At the doctoral level, it's like one institution. But at the basic level, there were seminary students interested in the music of the church who were taking courses over at the School of Music. And there was this kind of exchange taking place all around. What could we do to join together? It seems there's more separation growing, the unity and the benefits on both sides with closer cooperation.
Right. His question had to do with the relationship between the seminary and the rest of the university. It's probably not what it could be. I would agree with you on that. There was a discussion before I came to Andrews as to whether the seminary should be at Andrews or in Andrews, and I understand the wiser heads said it's in Andrews, not just geographically at Andrews, which was a kind of a watershed in a way that the brethren said, no, it's part of Andrews, get used to it. And so I have actually argued with the seminary students a little differently. They are graduating to be pastors. The university would be a wonderful clinical experience for them to practice their pastoral skills, because here you have some of the most demanding parishioners college students and faculty. The seminary people should be in the university and hone their skills as the spiritual leaders in the church. And of course, the faculty should set a good example by cross-fertilization. I am pleased that we have a joint MDiv MSW and MDiv Master of Public Health. So I think there are people who are recognizing the importance of that, and I think the current dean very much is seeing himself as part of the university. We are constantly talking together about things. So we've probably been negligent, but I don't think we are resisting it, just habits. And seminaries in the country are struggling a bit because the church, the Christian church in America, is not what it used to be. So many seminaries in the good universities are becoming divinity schools, or rather graduate school of Christian classics in some ways. And the more confessional seminaries tend to be a little separate from that. And that may have contributed to, and I've thought it's actually a good thing that in this time the seminary is a confessional faculty in a university at Andrews, whereas in other places that combination has not been prevalent. So, yes, you tell us when to stop.
Two more questions. And then
okay.
First one from Harold.
Thank you.
So what hard question are you going to ask
me? I cannot speak of Andrews, but I can speak of where I was for 32 years.
Yes.
When you referred to the fact that this needed some structural arrangement because the machine had too many parts and it would be more efficient with fewer parts, and of course having so many parts also means that a lot of money is spent in things that have nothing to do with education. And my immediate response to that, I mean, the immediate thing that comes to my mind is an office with 20 people working to get students to come. Admissions, recruitment and admissions, so that we do have 1,400 students in the freshman class. An office of counseling, so that we can keep all our students with some kind of mental health. An office of employment, so that they can get a job when they finish. By that time, by the time you finish, you have about 80 people who's with good salaries, which have nothing to do with the educational enterprise. Will you change that structure?
Dr. Weiss was my teacher once, when I was here, and he always asks me hard questions. his question is, part of the complexity of operating a university is support services of many kinds, and we have them here. Recruitment, admission, counseling, advising, and student financial aid, and IT, just those, which are enabling people to get in and operate here. And that is part of the problem. And then add on top of that regulations. We have regulations for everything. The size of windows, where the fire hydrants are kept, and all of that has to be monitored every year. We have a list of compliance with regulation that is 6 pages single space long. And we review it annually. And there are people who look after compliance with these regulations. So we can add to your list. And that is a problem for all higher education. That's why universities go bankrupt. Right. So we either keep it all and we all go bankrupt, or we find a way to change some of that. And I don't know how to, I don't think there can be dramatic changes, but maybe some incremental changes can be done to make it affordable. We have employed many more staff persons than teachers at Andrews. Well, 250 teachers and 1,000 employees. Huh? Think of that. So, and that is true everywhere. It is just becoming complicated. And I don't know, Harold, that I don't know what the solution is, but what we are trying to do, we are not blind to it, just sweeping through the campus, and we're asking, can this be done differently? Can we shorten the steps? And how about this? Can we combine these two things? Can we use technology over here to shoot it through faster? Things like that. And for those of you who teach, I hate to say that, but I remember, unfortunately, I remember how I thought when I was a teacher. And I remember distinctly saying, I really like that subject. I'd like to teach a class on that. Old Testament anthropology. I had spent 2 terms at Yale on a National Endowment for the Humanities grant, studying in the anthropology library, and written 2 or 3 articles on that. It was very interesting to me, and I thought, I'd like to teach that at Loma Linda. And I did, for 2 or 3 teachers who were really keen, students who were really keen on that. Did we need that class, or did I like it? It was a boutique class. We call them boutique classes. It has very high cost items and relatively few customers. How much of that can we keep doing as teachers? So I think we all of us have to ask that question. We are one family, and we all eat off of the same trough. Student tuition, half of which they borrow from the government. Okay? It's a huge, big thing. So thank you.
To put another, I don't remember the year, but I think it was 1980-something. I was asked to join a committee of the Board of Trustees at Andrews.
Yes.
That was supposed to study, I don't remember the name of the committee, but we were supposed to study multiple offerings which were doing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And what we discovered in that committee was that each department received money according to the number of students that they served, which meant that every department was offering general education courses because that's where the students were. And if they did it, and this meant that every department was teaching the same courses just to get money because they had students. And we recommended that something needs to be done here. Create a liberal education program that takes care of the requirements and take it out of the departments to offer those requirements. And because otherwise you were going to have this extra parts in the machine.
That is still part of our discussion.
Our recommendation ever applied or
well, they probably were, because it's not a new thing, duplication of classes. And some of that can be avoided. But in addition to that, there's another troubling factor now, and that is students can get these general education classes in many different places at a discount. And I've talked to arts and sciences counselors who tell me that they meet with students who come with stacks of transcripts from community colleges wishing to get their community college classes approved for Andrews transfer credit. That means we take the credit in, but no money. So this is a new thing, and distance education and free community colleges at every street corner is creating a challenge. And so I don't think there's a simple solution to that. We just have to address it. Very much so. Right. Last question, I'm told, in the back.
I want to follow up on what Kathy Kudell was saying to you. You answered her question from a church structure point of view about the church not necessarily being supportive of higher education. I'm wondering what you would say about the grassroots, because I think my experience has been when I've been out at small churches, they're very suspicious of what happens at higher education institutions. And so what would you say can we do about that?
Right, that is Kathy's question, and it is, isn't there suspicion of higher education in our church at the grassroots level? Yeah, probably, but there is suspicion of higher education at any grassroots level in the country, you go to any other church or people who are not in church and ask them what they think of a university, and they think that university people are pampered, high-paid professors who teach 8 hours or 12 hours a semester, and the rest of us have to work 40 hours a week. So that exists, I think. And I'm...
The difference is that they are not supporting a big educational system like our members are, so...
Yes, well, they pay taxes for it. That's another big discussion in Michigan. There's a measure before the legislature in Lansing to allow community colleges to offer 4-year degrees. Think of that for a moment, what that could do to Andrews. And curiously, the Association of 4-Year Colleges in the state of Michigan are fighting that, as you might expect, and they're doing it in a very interesting way. Community colleges can tax the local population. So if you live here, you are taxed to support Lake Michigan. There are no choice in the matter. Community colleges can only do that if they have a local board. They can only have a local board if they offer 2-year diplomas. The moment they offer 4-year degrees, they have to get a board appointed by Lansing, by the governor. And once they get a board appointed by Lansing, they can't tax locally. So they have to weigh, would we rather have local millage, or would we rather get a subsidy from the state to give us a right to offer 4-year degrees? That's churning as we speak right now, and that too will have an impact. So they discuss it back and forth, and I still think that yes, you can hardly expect people, including church members, who live in the towns and villages across Michigan, attend a little church. Have you been to some of those? 35 members, brown carpet, brown wood paneling, an organ that doesn't play, right, and a roof that is leaking, right? I went to one priest in one, and they had no one to play the hymn, so they got somebody who played the harmonica from a local bar, and he was playing along, and they were singing. And they come to campus, and they see this place, and they're saying, huh, we support, that's our school, and some are proud, and some are jealous. So this exists. However, the leadership, those who form opinions, those who sit on our board, generally speaking and in the aggregate, are very proud of Andrews University, and they like to talk to fellow religious leaders about the fact that we have a university here in Michigan, and I'd like to show it to you. So there is, in spite of this thing that you suspect, there is a deep support of education, I think. I mean, we do get $8 million a year. We don't even ask. And then we got another million. We got $2 million for the Health and Wellness Center. It was given to us. Every year, $8 million. Since I've been here, that's almost $200 million. I never had to ask once. Well, I asked once. I asked for $600,000 more the first year I got here. Did I tell you that? And Falkenberg was the General Conference President, and I was at some meeting with the brethren, and he stretched out his hand, and he said, congratulations on being President of Andrews. I pulled mine back and said, Brother Falkenberg, this will cost you. He said, how much? $50,000 a month. Yes? I said, yes, for graduate education at Andrews. Okay. And that's why we got an extra $600,000 a year, 50 times 12, in 1914. I got a lot of help from the board chairman, who said, ask for that amount. They will probably give it to you. So I did. So this, to me, is an indication of support. And then we do some things that they don't like, and they fuss about it, and I have to go and talk to them a little bit about it. But if we are responsible as believers and serious as scholars, the support, I think, is quite consistent and I think widespread. But I agree, of course, that sometimes some misunderstanding occurs or some people are jealous. Also, sometimes conferences, they're struggling. You know, the money in the church is flowing up. So little churches, members pay in their money, and they can't afford to fix the roof. it goes to the conference, it goes to the union, it goes to the general conference, and they give $1 million to Andrews. And the little church in Dvorak is still dripping. And what are we doing with it? Making classes for people in China or in the Middle East. So you expect that requires some explanation, but yet the fact is it continues. And you have to account for that in some way. And I think the way is that we are an education church. And that's probably why I'm in it. My uncle in Denmark was a salesman. He sold butter and cheese. And then he got cancer. And he had become a Jehovah Witness. And he would not accept blood transfusion because he thought some mystique about the blood. So he died from his cancer. I thought, fancy that. A Christian church is sending its members to the death because of some silly, uninformed doctrine. And we know blood is just part of the body and we can take it out and put it in and help people get better. To me, that's an indication that we are education-minded and we want to know. And we use our colleges to figure out what there is to know, more or less, most of the time. Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you.
Some of us have wondered what the Andreasens are going to do in retirement. I have a sneak preview. I have it. Mrs. Andreasen has told me on the sly that they will be spending winters with us. And summers in California. Isn't that a wonderful idea? Yes. We appreciate Martin Luther nailing his 14 theses. So, let's thank you.